Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Brains, welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney. Here, this is the spot, right here. This is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, we have Samantha Fowl from Denver, Colorado. She's an environmentalist. She calls herself the green tech girl?
The green tech girl, that's right. That's what? In the evening when I put on my mask and cape after I kick off my high heels, that's who I am. I'm the green tech girl.
Go ahead, sister, I love it. Grace, we're gonna talk about everything environmentalist, from the misappropriation of information that we're getting from our government, from the back end money for fracking and for recycling and, you know, green gases, to what is going on with technology and moving forward, and, you know, the Tesla vehicles and batteries, technology, but also what we can do one person at a time to make this planet a better place. Because this is the only place that we know of. I don't believe that it's the only place that exists, but this is the only place we have access to. So we want to love it. We want to honor it. We want to nurture it, the animals, the trees, the water, each other. And so Samantha is here to share with us great wisdom and innovation, how we move forward. So let's welcome her to the edge, the beautiful Samantha Fowl.
Thank you, April. Thank you. Thank you for the warm welcomes. And yes, I agree. I think that we can all look forward to the Star Trek future of a peaceful planet, an age of space exploration where there's lots and lots and lots of options. But for now, living in the present, we are definitely, we need to start prioritizing taking care of the Earth that we live on today. That is our home. And that's what my book is all about, right?
Bravo, bravo.
Environmental Activism 2.0. Yes, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
2.0, yeah. Brain, she's on steroids, okay? She's kicking it up a notch.
I can't tell you how excited I get when I talk about really, you know, all of my work in this field, because I can't help but be a perpetual optimist. I am just always sure, for better or for worse, that things are going to turn out a-okay. And it's tough to be an optimistic environmentalist, you know? Especially, you know, following some of the rollback of some of the environmental regulations, environmental protection laws, and things that happened under the last administration, and just as all of us every single day are experiencing the impacts of climate change, right? Weather's getting a little weird, right, for everyone. Extinction and the loss of precious species. And even, you know, just like litter and pollution and clean air and clean water. I mean, you know, things like the Flint water crisis, that's not as rare of a story as you would hope that it is, that it would be. It's actually, you know, the pollution that has gotten into our air and our water and our public spaces is really impacting everyone. And I think everyone feels it, you know.
Well, they do feel it, and it's out of sorts because it's causing disease and sickness in our bodies and in our minds.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, you know, you go to the doctor and they can't determine what's wrong. Well, they probably need to test the water that you're drinking. Talking mm-hmm. about water, I got a notice in the mail that they are going full effect. Desalinization. Did I say that right?
Desalinization, yeah.
Flint is now putting in the toilet water in the tap. Well, I went to the plant after I got the notice and tasted the water, and it was amazingly taste clean. But you have no idea. My mother was a bottled water fan. And I told her, I said, you have no idea what's in that water. It could be tap water in the bottles. You know, water is a necessity for everything. The earth is 2/3 water. So, you know, let's start there. Let's start in the beginning with the water. Sure. Tell me some things that are going on.
So in terms of, let's go back to, you know, your example of the tap water. I will say one, that's really incredible. A lot of people don't like the idea, right, of, you know, taking wastewater and turning it back into, you know, potable tap water. But the truth of the matter is that our natural water sources have become so polluted, we have very little options. This is true in a lot of, in actually a lot of the spaces. A lot of the things that we have come to rely on every day, electronic devices, clean water, internet access, all sorts of things like that. They are actually starting to impact, you know, they're accumulating waste and they're accumulating pollution in a manner that's actually causing real decision makers to like turn around and look and say, you know what, hey, maybe it's best for everyone if we recycle this instead of dumping it, right? Because well, it's really just becoming a problem. Yeah.
Because when I went to the plant, they said that the water that comes through the tap has been through the tap 365 times already.
Yes. Yeah.
Already.
And the truth of the matter is a lot of the infrastructure that is behind those taps, right? The plumbing in between the walls of houses, the systems that feed tap water into, you know, communities and neighborhoods and businesses, sometimes they get contaminated and then that's it, right? You know, there is no purification system, right? There's some sort of upstream contamination. So returning to the example of Flint, Michigan, right? So we all remember the Flint water crisis. That was truly an accident. It was an unintended consequence of a simple decision to switch a source of water. But as it turned out, because of, you know, just the chemistry and the pH balance of the water, it ended up leaching lead in a really, 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 really dangerous amount. And it resulted in a lot of, you know, people, especially young people, kids, accumulating dangerous amounts of lead toxins in their blood. And talk about the health impacts of that, right? Not only do you struggle from, you know, developmental impacts as a young person who has been, you know, poisoned by lead, but also there are lifelong issues with, you know, kidneys, heart, brain, you name it. It's an extremely toxic substance. And we all remember Flint. But the fact of the matter is that lead contamination is more common than you would like to believe. There are certain areas, specifically in Georgia, in West Virginia, in, you know, the so-called sort of Rust Belt states, that have been so impacted by mining and industrial activity that these same leads and other heavy metals have accumulated in their tap water to the point where sometimes, you know, 20, 25, 30% of kids in individual communities in these areas will test for elevated levels of lead in their blood. And the fact of the matter is that nobody wants that to happen. Nobody wants that to happen. There is no one out there who will say, you know what? It's a little bit too expensive to protect children from being poisoned in this way. It's a little bit inefficient to invest in our infrastructure and, you know, this and that and the other thing to help prevent people from being poisoned. But the fact of the matter is like, so many of us are living in that aging infrastructure where
we are. And you know, you talk about the food that we eat, you know, the animals are drinking this water, the agriculture that the water is, you know, going into our plants, fruits, vegetables, all of those things. So we want to start there, but how we're polluting the ocean. Oh my God.
Yes.
I went to the Caribbean and I couldn't believe that they didn't have a recycling option there. They are still burning it.
Yes.
And the stench and the amount of smoke and the amount of plastic that they were trying to melt down was unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, you think about ships that throw things overboard. Mm-hmm. A lot of ships. Cargo ships.
Dumping bilge, dumping sewage. That's what they do when they're out in the ocean. Yeah.
And that stuff does not deteriorate. It's not biodegradable.
Yeah.
So let's move on to other things like you know, energy. Mm-hmm. What we are doing, everyone is looking towards electricity, you know, but it's still, you have to generate electricity some kind of way. Solar panels are very popular now. Wind generation are very popular now. What are you seeing in the way of energy production?
Well, you know, as I said, you know, we're getting down to, like, you know, just talking about all of the issues that people suffer from the environmental impacts. I can't get too far away from the fact that my message is all about solutions. The book, Be Decent, Environmental Activism 2.0, is all about how, yeah, big these problems are, undeniably big. You know, they're surrounding our food, our water, our the air that we breathe, the electricity that we rely on. But there are actually solutions to even the biggest environmental issues that you and I can access right away. So talking about energy, right? So, okay. I do not live in a place, nor do I have the funds available for me to generate my own electricity through solar panels, right? Okay, I just can't do it. It's amazing. Whenever I see the renewable energy investments, that's awesome. There's always some stuff in terms of, like, the e-waste accumulation and, like, sort of the waste management stream of renewable energy technology. But that's actually, there's some really exciting progress happening in that space in terms of recycling, you know, electronic materials. So anyway, I'm all about renewable energy. It's super exciting. It's going amazing. It's going great places, right? But it's not accessible to me. I can't do it personally. No matter how much I want to, I can't.
I can. They want me to have solar panels on my house. However, my house is designed on gas.
Yeah,
you know, so, I have a gas water heater. You know, everything is gas. So for me to get solar panels is not cost effective.
Exactly. It just doesn't make sense for everyone. It is not accessible for everyone, right? So you can't really, even though the ideal of having solar panels on every roof in America, like, you know, it's great, but it's just it's not reasonable. So what can we do instead? Right? I'll tell you exactly what we can do. Invest in smart home or smart appliance devices, right? There are all sorts of apps that you can get for your phone. There are all sorts of things that you can do through your Alexa or your Nest or your Google Home device that will substantially reduce your energy use, not by making it less comfortable or less easy to live in your space, but by increasing your efficiency, right? By automating things, by, you know, having more precise control of, you know, your temperature and your, you know, when your appliances are used and different things like that. And that's something that anyone who uses electricity can access. Anyone who has a smartphone can access. And it has just as powerful of an impact as creating new electricity, right? You're reducing the demand for the electricity that we already have.
Right. What do you think about, and my brains are going to want to know, I always speak to my guests with love, but I come to you as a straight shooter. You know, there's some extreme groups like Greenpeace that really go out and are, you know, blocking things, you know, wreaking havoc in certain situations for this environmental cause. What is your position on people feeling so strongly about this? And not that particular group, but just in general, because, you know, we all care, you know, yeah. But do we have to be so extreme to get an impact, to get our voice heard?
Well, I will say, me personally, and all of my messages are underpinned by ideological nonviolence. I'm committed to ideological nonviolence personally, and that's something that I advocate for in every single space. So I will never justify the use of violence for any, you know, any means, no matter how, you know, morally or ethically or critical it may seem. However, I will say that, and this is also covered in the book, right? This is a form of activism. This is a form of sharing information and spreading information. And so, you know, I would point to, okay, like, you know, so maybe, like, you know, the message, you know, in terms of the climate action and, you know, all the marches that we're seeing and people that are actually taking to the streets with signs and really, you know, getting the message out there. I say that's a fantastic thing. And, you know, regarding, you know, whether or not that's too extreme or not extreme enough, you know, that really is a matter of personal opinion. But I will say that it's critical for advocacy. I point to the Umbrella Revolution in Hong Kong, which has been primarily led by young dissidents who are, you know, who want to see a free and democratic Hong Kong, even though it's been transferred to Chinese ownership. I also point to the Me Too movement and, you know, what's really become a really powerful experience in terms of the WMX march, right? And of course, you know, Black Lives Matter. I personally am happy to participate in any sort of public demonstration and for any of these sorts of things. And I do, right? I certainly can't say it's too extreme because I think it's a great way to get the word out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, people have to have someone to stand up for these causes. You stand up for something or you'll fall for anything. So I get that. So let's move on to animals. You know, I love the animals.
Yeah.
And they are just becoming extinct. I mean, look at the bees, for heaven's sake.
Yes.
We can't live without bees pollinating, you know, cross-pollinating.
Yes.
What are you seeing happening in that space?
Yeah. So there is a really terrifying trend in terms of extinction. And it's something that really gets me right here as an animal lover. You know, as I said, you know, I'm ideologically nonviolent. I'm a committed vegetarian. I'm a dog mom of 12 years to my beloved German Shepherd. And ever since I was, born, plants and animals have been, you know, in my heart and in my soul and in my happy space. And the fact that we are losing so many species is, it's tragic. So there is a natural rate of extinction. Okay. There's a so-called natural extinction that occurs in the, you know, sort of like as there's an ebb and flow of species. And that should be around five individual species per year. Right now we are losing 1,000 to 10,000 times that amount.
Wow.
Thousands and thousands of species are going extinct every year. That includes, you know, a substantial portion of, you know, all of the conifers, right? And you know, so the pines and the evergreens that we have come to associate with, you know, the winter and you know, sort of part of our woodland experience here. It includes certainly a lot of large mammals. Okay, you know, we all know about the polar bears and the panda bears. The white rhinoceros right now is functionally extinct. There is only one left. So there is no more opportunity for a breeding pair for the white rhinoceros. And so we are experiencing the loss of that species. You know, fish and rays and corals in the ocean, sharks, the species loss is really... It's devastating. It's incredibly tragic. And this is occurring for all sorts of reasons surrounding human impact, truly. Like I said, you know, this happens in nature, but we are really exacerbating it by changing the climates, by, you know, poaching and hunting and all sorts of things.
And, you know, and climate change.
Yes.
There's no way in the world, I don't know how anybody cannot believe that climate change is not real. I'm looking at the amount of devastation that is happening here in California with the wildfires. I mean, there's a natural burn off, but this is going crazy.
Yes.
The floods, poor folks in New Orleans and Louisiana. I honestly couldn't even see myself going to visit there. You know, the levees that are just overflowing, the amount of water, the tornadoes. And I don't really kind of see a way for us to reverse that. What can we do as individuals to really contribute to a resolution?
There are, yeah, it does. It, that's the problem, right? It seems so big. The fact that we're losing thousands of species every year, the fact that we are experiencing climate change. And, you know, your point regarding climate deniers is well made. I did recently, last year or so, write a blog article about, you know, the top 10 climate deniers in American leadership or whatever, because weirdly, the American people believe in climate change because they see it and they live it. It's like 85, 90, 90% of people, whenever they're polled, they believe in climate change because, like, you see it, right? There is an odd denial that occurs in the leadership where it's just kind of part of towing the ideological line a bit. And again, that's covered in the book. The entire first chapter of this book is about how, unfortunately, we have been perpetuating so many lies about the environment and the economy and, you know, sort of, you know, all these sorts of things that we can no longer really trust our leadership to fix it. It's up to us to fix it. So how do we fix extinction? How do we fix climate change? Well, starting with climate change, we already, Google Nest and smart home devices, all of the many, many, many apps that are available to reduce your climatological impact. But believe it or not, the number one thing that we can do for the environment is to reduce the amount of meat that we eat, believe it or not. Now, obviously, like, not asking anyone to go vegetarian, vegan, you know, that's an extreme life choice. Okay, like, that's an entire lifestyle. That's a whole thing in and of itself. But if you just say, okay, one day a week, I'm going to do no meat. That is the most powerful thing that any one individual can do for the climate right now, because they're just the way that we, farm and source and ranch our meat and our fish and things like that is actually very, very, very climate intensive and environmentally intensive. So just a little thing, just a little shift that, you know, if enough people, get excited about, feel empowered to do, we can have a major positive change.
Things like composting, things like, again, recycling, reducing the amount of plastics. You don't have to have a plastic water bottle. You can get a carry-on.
Yes, exactly. And you can customize it, and it's so fun and stylish.
Absolutely. You can educate your children on what that looks like. You can grow your own food. It's so fun to look out in your garden and see some strawberries or see some tomatoes. I had a little problem, though. I had a little rascal back there, a little squirrel, girl. And I
tell you, all your strawberries.
Oh, my God. He had a little strawberry. He had a little tomato. I had to catch him and take him back over to the park because he was really going at it.
So funny.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. So in the pages of your book, you write about solutions. And I love that because I like a solution seeker, not just a problem describer.
Yeah.
We all see what the problem is. How did you get involved and how did you start in this space to begin with?
Well, as I said, my entire life, it's part of, like, my purpose of being is to love nature. It's my happy place. Even whenever I find myself, I live in Denver. I travel for work to, big cities. I find the botanic gardens. I find the parks. I find a place where I can just sit and be in that environment. So it's just very personally important to me. That really led me to pursue an education and a career in this field, honestly. So I actually do have a law degree as well as an LLM in environmental law and a master's in energy regulation from Vermont Law School, which is the country's number one environmental law school. Go fighting swans. I've got some receipts on this. I've done a fair amount of, I've achieved kind of all you can achieve in terms of, like, the academic study of the subject, and I've done a fair amount of, just kind of consulting and work on that. And so, I would have conversations around, like, lunches and coffees and things about, oh, did you know such and such a thing? And did you know such and such a thing about, the things that you can do for your environment, the things you can do for the environment, things you can do to protect species, the things that you can do to feel empowered about having a positive impact on all of these big environmental issues that are all around us. And eventually I just decided, you know what, like, I want this to be available. I want this, I want to put it all in one place, right? And I want people to be able to access it, you know, and really, as I said, discover empowerment in terms of, you know, saying, okay, I can do something about climate change. I can do something about extinction. I can do something about, you know, dangerous toxins and litter in my community. You know, going back to the point about extinction, one of the troubling things about extinction is that we know that it's happening at a way higher rate than it needs to. But we don't have a lot of data about where, like, you know, we might find new populations or new species or shifting things. And so one of the really fun apps that I love using is called iNaturalist. I like, you know, like the iPhone, right? iNaturalist. And it uses your iPhone. You take it on a hike with you or wherever you may be. And you can take pictures of, you know, like plants and, like, you know, different things. And it will tell you what it is and, like, you know, help you inform and help you engage with the experience. And, like, you know, it's kind of cool. Just, you know, you can chat with your friends about it and where it's from, whatever. And also it helps log environmental information about that species, which improves conservation efforts in the future. So it's a win-win. Well,
that's good. That is great. That's something to share with the younger generation, Generation Z, because they're really concerned about, yes, you know, what are we leaving for them? What sort of planet is, you know, what are they going to be eating? What are they going to be breathing? You know, women are concerned about the environment as they're pregnant now, you know, yeah, all of these different things. We're worried about COVID-19. How is that going to impact us long term? You know, mm-hmm, so we have no idea, because I don't believe that it's going away. All of this time that we have spent in isolation and in quiet, or as I say, in timeout, what has it taught you about you, Samantha?
Well, I would say that my first decision regarding how I'm going to cope with being in timeout was to do my homework, right? I was like, I'm just going to read and write and study. And, like, you know, I took on this big project. The book I published just in March of this year, March of 2021. And so, you know, it's been years in the making, but it was really just kind of, you know, the project that I took on you know, kind of keep myself interested, keep myself occupied. And I will tell you that, you know, it was great as a distraction, but there is just no substitute and no replacement for human connection. And discovering ways to connect with people virtually, whereas we used to do it, you know, now in person's coming back, you know, it's wonderful, it's amazing, we have vaccines, we have, you know, all sorts of, thank goodness, right. But, you know, it's really been a big lesson, I think, for myself and probably a lot of other people out there, is, you know, how to make, mm-hmm, you make sure that personal connection comes through, even though you're in a digital, right, medium.
You're valued. You, yes, know, your relationships are valued. Your,
yes,
connections with one another. Again, being able to go out in nature. I mean, we were restricted from going to the beaches. We were restricted, yeah, from going to the parks. People really had a newfound appreciation for those areas, you know, and what that took. And then when they let them go, the college students ran amok on the beaches in Florida, and there was just trash and pollution everywhere. They just,
yes,
they party, yes, like rock stars. So what do you say to people right now? What would you encourage them to do outside of the apps and purchasing your book that they can do to make this planet a little bit better, a little bit cleaner, a little bit more efficient?
Say, you know, the key message of environmental activism 2.0, right? The idea of, like, activism 2.0 is, like, yeah, I love getting myself a cardboard sign and joining a picket, right? I think that's a fun way to spend a Sunday afternoon to me, right? But that's not the way that everyone thinks, and that's not the way that everyone sees things. So how do you become an activist? How do you engage and participate with causes that are important to you? For me, it's environmentalism. For you, it might be something entirely different. There are countless important causes out there. And the way that we do it is this right here, right? Oops, sorry.
And that right there.
The way that we do it is this right here, right? We are constantly sharing information. We are talking about, you know, what we eat and what we wear and who we see and where we want to go on vacation and, like, you know, all these things. And so, you know, just start to think, like, well, maybe it's a good idea just every so often to share some content about things that I care about and are important to me in my community. I have a great story about that that came from my very own mother. So my mother, she's, you know, she's kind of like semi-retired. She shares a split of time between, you know, Florida, North Carolina. And on one of the places on her commute, there's a highway that goes across a, you know, a state park, I believe. Or, and so one day, a bunch of trash bags appeared, like, right on the edge of this, like, you know, open space. And it was visible from the highway. Like, you know, it does 12, 18 trash bags. And enough people took pictures and shared about the appearance of these trash bags on social media that the sheriff actually created it, launched an investigation, and found the person who did the illegal dumping, and, you know, not only got it cleaned up, but also issued the proper citation and fine for that person, so that they know that that's not okay, right? So, I mean, it's not something like, oh, you know, like, ideological, you have to get on your soapbox, or you have to, like, you know, try extra hard. It's just, you know what, like, if you see something gross, or if you see something that bothers you, or if you, like, if something comes across your newsfeed about, you know, like, water or air or climate change, you know, just click and share, like, comment, you know, tag people. Like, you know, it's something that we all do care about. It's something that is engaging stuff. So it's shareable content.
It's easy.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, it's just, as you're doing it, you know, just have that consideration in the back of your mind, right? Like, you know, as I said, you know, one of the big things that I love to do is share vegetarian and vegan recipes. Not only because, like I said, I've been a vegetarian for many, many years. You know, my friends always ask me, like, what are some recipes? What do you do? Like, you know, but also because, you know, just cutting a little bit of meat out of your diet is one of the most powerful things you can do for the environment. So,
well, hey, you know what? I share recipes. One of the most powerful things that you can do for your intestinal tract.
I will tell you, one of the reasons why I'm vegetarian is because I feel,
you know what? I've seen some pretty chunky vegetarians, too. Maybe it's because of other things that they're incorporating, maybe the glutens, because, you know, or maybe the sugars. So don't get so caught up in the fact of just being a vegetarian is going to save your life. You have to be disciplined, and you have to understand what you're doing in any
way. Yeah.
I get that.
Of course.
Did Absolutely. You put some vegetarian recipes in the book?
I did not put any vegetarian recipes in the book, but I am always posting them every Monday on social media. I do Meatless Mondays, right? That's one of my little things that I do in Environmental Activism 2.0.
I'm going to check that out because, you know, I tried vegan cooking. Girl, it tasted like straw.
You know, I have an awesome vegan recipe that I think is, like, super yummy and super easy. And, you know, one of the things that's kind of nice about vegetarian cooking is that it's cheap and it's healthy, right? So one of the things that
I'll go back on that. It's not all that cheap because
it's not always cheap.
Right. You know, because again, if you're getting organics, mm-hmm. You know, and you're going to some of these high end, you know, specialty grocery stores, produce can be equally as expensive. But again, if you're going to pay for junk food, you know, we went out and had some burgers and fries, you know, a couple of beverages. I think we paid like $42 for two people to eat. We could have had three or four great vegetarian meals.
Yes. And so, yeah, one of the, like I said, I post them every Monday. One of the last ones that I did was essentially like a quick and easy vegan pad thai. Right. So, yeah, you know, if you have some pasta and some peanuts and some garlic onion hot sauce in your pantry, that's all you need. Right. So you do some pasta of your choice. I like it with the rice noodles. I have rice noodles laying around, but you don't have to. Right. You can do spaghetti or linguine or, you know, angel hair, whatever. So you make your pasta. If you have some peanut butter, do like, you know, a half cup of peanut butter and start to cook it in like, you know, some oil, whatever oil you've got, like, you know, canola oil, sesame oil, sunflower oil, olive oil, you know, right? And so, you know, you do like a half cup of peanut butter, like, you know, like a quarter cup of oil, a little bit of soy sauce, a little bit of hot sauce, like a couple tablespoons of hot sauce, extra hot if you like extra hot. I do, right? And yeah, you know, so you're cooking it in the pan, right? Your pasta's working, you know, you got your sauce, you got your, you know, peanut butter and, you know, oil and hot sauce and soy sauce. And then you do some garlic and onions in there. So you chop them, you know, however you like. And yeah, just, you know, like kind of let that work while you're cooking your pasta, you know, drain. And then mix that all up, add, you know, garnish with like some sesame seeds and chopped peanuts and, you know, whatever else you might like. And there you go. Cheap, easy, fun, yummy, spicy, nutty.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back and listen to this and write that down and try it. And then I will send you a message and let you know how it tastes.
Girl, let me know. I'm sure it's going to be good.
So next thing that we have to look forward to is your cookbook.
I think that you are definitely, you know, great minds are thinking alike all over here, because I will say that I've already got an idea about a follow-up to Be Decent called Eat Decent. Right?
All right. Okay. Go ahead with yourself. I know. Well, you are a decent soul. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you and how to purchase a copy of Be Decent.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you, April. I am so, so, so grateful to have been a guest. You are just a lovely ray of sunshine. And thank you, Brains, for, you know, getting to know me a little bit about what I do. You can follow me and get recipes in addition to some environmental tips at Green Tech Girl on Instagram and Facebook. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Samantha Jewel Fowle, J-O-U-L-E. You can find the book right now on Amazon.com, Be Decent, Environmental Activism 2.0.
Put that up so we can see it. Right. Put it up so we can see it.
Oh, right?
Look at that.
Be Decent, Environmental Activism 2.0 on Amazon. It has a beautiful tree on the cover, blue and turkey and all that. It's full of all sorts of really awesome tips for environmental empowerment in the age of, like, you know, kind of like virtual, like where everyone's virtual, everyone's digital. And it will be available in local bookstores soon, but it's kind of like in the works. I've got stuff working to make sure that it's going to be available locally.
Work it out, baby, because that's exactly what you're doing. Brains, you know, we have to take this seriously, and time is ticking. You know, the clock is ticking, and we can't go back. Okay, the future is not promised. All we have is the present.
Yeah.
So, you know, get with it. If it's a sign, if it is reducing the amount of plastics that you use, if it is brushing your teeth and turn the faucet off, good gracious. You know, it's the little things. Loving on your animals, respecting one another's space, recycling your clothes, repurposing them. You know, you don't really realize, again, meat and your clothing use so much electricity and resources. So there's little things that we can do. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot. Brains, I need you to go in, okay? Check it out. Other edgy conversations on the edge. We want you to love, like, share, and subscribe to me and Samantha's pages. We're doing this because we care about you. It's not just about us. We're one individual, but we're talking about 2.4 billion people on the planet. That's a lot of folks. That's a lot of brains. Let's connect. Thanks so much again, Samantha, for being here on The Edge. I appreciate you.
Likewise, April. It's been a true joy.
All right. Bye, brains.